And welcome to this episode of the Noisecast. It's Alberto here, holding it down as Paul is getting ready for his big wedding day. So congrats to you, Paul, and to your fiance. I hope everything is well on your end. This episode is going to be a short one. I just kind of wanted to make sure that we had something for the month of September. I'm doing my best to keep on top of these, make sure that there's some new content every month as promised. This is as much for me as it is for you guys. I want to make sure that I'm delivering on my promises to you and making sure that you guys are kept up to date with what's going on here at the Noisecast. So a lot's been going on. It's been a crazy summer. Like, we're officially into fall. And with that comes camera season. So we had iPhone season at the beginning of the month. We have camera season now that Photokina is just about wrapped up. And that's kind of where we're going to focus our attention in this episode. So just jumping right into it, Apple announced their new iPhones, the iPhone XS, XS Max, and the new XR. For those of you who keep calling them the iPhone X, totally get it. It's a stupid naming convention. I hate the iPhone XS Max. I think it's a stupid name. The iPhone XR, I think, leaves a lot to be desired. But, you know, we're going to jump right into that. Early this month, Apple announced the new XS and the entire XS line. While that sounds like tennis shoe, it actually means 10S, as in the typical S, I guess, suffix at the end of their iteration phones. The XS actually stands out as kind of like the phone to get if you're so inclined to pick up the latest iPhone. There are some things that you should know right off the bat. While the XS Max is the big boy of the family, weighing in at a, coming in at a 6.5-inch display, it's the largest display on any iPhone to date. You know, once again, bordering on, I guess, mini tablet size. The XS comes in at 5.8 inches, and oddly enough, the cheaper 10R comes in at 6.1 inches. The major determining factor here happens to be with the 10R's cheaper display. While it is a Retina display, many people who have, I guess, given their thoughts on YouTube and other review sites are that the display leaves a lot to be wanting. So if you're looking for a new iPhone this season, then you probably want to like lean towards that XS. The 5.8 display is actually a really, really beautiful crisp display. You know, there are incremental changes to the camera. It handles high contrast situations a lot better. You know, the there was a thing where they showed off the Lytra-like change in focus. People weren't sure if, like, you can, you know, they branded it as kind of a shoot now, focus later type situation. And while you can do that, it's not like the Lytra light field vision photography where essentially you just took essentially multiple shots and then you decided where was the focus point. Well, I guess it's exactly like that. The major difference here is that, you know, realistically, I don't really see like the benefit there. It's one of those things where it just looks a little weird. It just doesn't look natural when you do select your focus points after the fact. Part of it has to do with the way the software processes the images. Again, it's not that it does a bad job of it. It's not that it doesn't do it speedily enough. It's just that it, for me personally, just a little strange. Similar thing with the aperture setting. So like when got a chance to play with the iPhone for a bit. Unfortunately, not mine, not something that I've had for any kind of extended period of time. But again, it's just like everything seems to work just a little bit better than the 10, which is what you can expect with an S model year. You know, there's a lot to be said about just kind of, you know, where these phones are going. Like, if it seems like I am not very interested in the phone, it's not that I'm not interested, it's just that, you know, I feel like we've been here. You know, we've done this before. You know, Apple announced the 10. The 10 was, well, you know, tons of technology in there. Nothing really, really, like, grabbed my attention. This year, the only thing that really stands out is that the 10S promises all-day battery life. I think that's a definite plus. I think that's something that, you know, people really will use in the long run. I think things like the post-shot focusing, the studio lighting, like in last year's, these are all things that they're pretty gimmicky, I guess. Gimmicky. I'm going to call them gimmicky. You know, is Apple alone in doing this? No, absolutely not. The Pixel does something similar. The Note 9, which I currently have under review, does something very similar. You know, it's not... It's something that you'll use once. It's kind of like the Animojis, the Bitmojis, whatever the hell they're called. You know, you use them one time. You just bought your phone. You did karaoke with your emoji, and then you never used it again. You know, like, that's just kind of how it is. I do got to say, the iOS 12 implementation on the 10S is superbly done. It's pretty boring because this is kind of what we've come to expect. You know, every year Apple, you know, creates a new OS for their new flagship phone. The flagship phone absolutely just kind of soars with it. And yeah, you know, wash, rinse, repeat. That's kind of where we are with phones. What gets my attention right away is the much improved display. There are phones with better displays. Like, you know, I gotta say, the Note 9 has a beautiful display. It's a full 1080p display. This is, you know, it's Apple being Apple. It has a very strange aspect ratio. It's not quite 16:9. But at the same time, look, if you're watching movies on your phone, how much are you really, like, seeing and not seeing? It's questionable. So, you know, it all comes down to the source. Like, you're not really streaming 4K onto your phone. If you're downloading these movies and watching them in 4K, more power to you. You can't do it on the iPhone. It doesn't have a 4K display. You know, at best, you're watching in 1080p. Again, good stuff. You know, nothing to write home about. The 10S Max. So I've spent a lot of time talking about the 10S. It's the smallest of the new 10 phones, the iPhone 10 phones. But again, you know, if you're looking at, like, bang for your buck, you know, the 10S is pretty much where it is, unless you absolutely, absolutely want a giant screen. Some people do, some people don't. Oh, I guess if you want gold too, like, you know, the 10S Max comes in gold. I believe the 10S comes in gold as well, but... You know, you could get a giant screen and a gold phone. If that's your thing, you know, you have the 6.5-inch 10X Max. 10S Max. Oh. Apple, can we have a serious heart-to-heart here? Apple, if you're listening right now, rename these things. Like, I hate saying these names. These names suck. They're great phones. They're beautiful phones. Very well put together. The software is exactly what you'd expect from Apple. If you're in the Apple ecosystem, you're not going to want to switch to a Samsung Galaxy. You're not going to want to switch to a Google Pixel. But, you know, like, I sound like a dick saying these names, you know? Like, it's like the 10S Max, the 10R, the 10S, like, you know what, just call them an iPhone, you know, and just give them some other name, I don't know, but, like, I hate the naming convention, it's getting really stupid. Yeah, I mean, look, if this is going to be what, you know, the iPhones are going to be, like, you know, iPhone, 5.8-inch iPhone, 6.5-inch iPhone, 6.1-inch iPhone, simple. You know, the SE line, or rather, you know, like the 8 and the 7, like, you know, get rid of them. Like, if you're no longer going to start selling them, just, you know, we can go back to, like, it works for the Mac line. I don't see why there should be anything different. You know, you have a Mac Pro, you have a Mac, you have a MacBook Air. There it is. MacBook, MacBook Pro, MacBook Air. We know what they are. We go by the year in which they were released. We could do the same thing with the iPhones. This whole 10S, 10, you know, like, it's stupid. Let's cut it out. And switching gears a bit, we have Nikon, who, ahead of Fonakina, announced the new full-frame mirrorless camera, the Z series. As you can expect, the Z series had a brand new mount system, whole new lens lineup, and of course, not to be one to throw the baby without the bathwater, Nikon decided that they were going to create a mount adapter so that you can adapt all your Nikon lenses, or all your full frame Nikon lenses, onto the new mirrorless system. So, you know, you can jump right into the system without necessarily buying the new lenses. You have the Z6 and the Z7. One was more so aimed at the prosumer level, the Z6, and the Z7, which was more of their pro line camera. The Z7 had a 45.7 megapixel sensor. The Z6 is 24.5 megapixels. So you're talking about, you know, what you'd expect from kind of like the A7 III versus the A7 R3. One of the big caveats here is that if you're looking for a dual card slot system on your new Nikon mirrorless camera, you will not find it. In fact, you will only find one card slot, and it is not an SD card slot. It's actually a XQD card slot. So, like, a faster, more expensive memory. And unfortunately, beyond that, it's kind of a snooze fest. You know, at this point, everyone has been waiting on Canon and Nikon to, like, knock it out the park with mirrorless technology. They have the history, the legacy of these robust lenses, these lens systems. They've had years to kind of look at what Sony was doing and come up with something that they can absolutely just, you know, wow you with. Unfortunately, that has not been the case. You know, the Z7 and the Z6 are pretty much, you know, also-rans, especially when you're considering them side-by-side with the Sony A7 series and A9 series of cameras. Unfortunately, you know, you're talking about a heavy investment, you know, $2,000 for the Z6, about $3,300 or so I've seen online for the Z7. You know, obviously these are without an adapter or lens mount. Canon, again, they announced their brand new line of cameras as well, the EOS R. So again, same thing. Beautiful camera that they, for some reason, release without the ability to shoot with an electronic shutter, which kind of defeats the purpose of going mirrorless, right? Because you want to have the silent shutter. It's a hot mess. But again, you know, they have these beautiful lenses. You know, again, the trifecta that you'd expect from anyone starting out in any kind of photography. You have a fast 50. Both Nikon and Canon have a fast 50. They have your standard zoom, the 24 to 70. And I believe those are all F4, so like, you know, kind of the equivalent of like a F4 L lens or the Nikon equivalent. I believe it's DX lenses. I'm not entirely sure right now. I'm kind of like blocking out. So here we have an opportunity, a missed opportunity, I feel, by both Canon and Nikon, where they could have really, really, you know, given us something that would absolutely wow us, absolutely like knock it out the park, and it just missed it. You know, Panasonic, there was a rumor going into Photokina that Panasonic would announce a full-frame mirrorless camera as well. So, and they did. Panasonic introduced the Lumix S, the S1, and, you know, again, two full-frame cameras, you know, two full-frame camera bodies, one with the 24 megapixels, one with the 40 megapixels. The megapixel counts, in my opinion, are... I mean, look, it's what you expect. This is what you really expect camera makers to make at this point. It's not really a big wow factor, but I do have to say that in terms of looks, the Lumix camera actually does have my attention. I do like the idea behind... I want to give Nikon and Canon their due. I think using the XQD memory is a big plus. I think, you know, that's definitely where... the future of flash memory is going, at least in terms of this type of application. But Panasonic, you know, while Nikon and Canon, you know, hemmed and hawed about why there was only one card slot, you can only put a XQD card slot with and no SD slot, and Panasonic just came out, like, kind of bitch slapped them one time and said, hey, our camera here has all the things that these guys are saying they're doing, but we have an XQD slot and an SD card slot for backup. So, yeah, I'm not quite sure what's the story with Nikon and Canon there. Another quick note about the S line of cameras, the Panasonic S line will share a mount system with Leica's L mount. So if you're familiar with Leica's SL line of cameras, like, you know what those lenses are, what they are capable of. However, I will be very, very blunt here. Ultimately, it comes down to what Panasonic has to offer in terms of their lens lineup. They do have a very interesting lens roadmap ahead of them. I think this is great. But again, have to wait and see, because if I was to, you know, drop coin, get a Panasonic S1, cool. Like, it's beautiful. I'm pretty sure it'll perform just as well as the Nikon or Canon or Sony. But I can't afford L lenses, you know, like, or at least the Leica L lenses. You know, you're talking about a 50 that goes for about, I think it was $2,000 last I checked. It's a big, heavy investment. So I have to wait until Panasonic kind of fleshes out their lens lineup. And I would urge the same thing for anyone jumping into the Nikon or Canon. Again, you have to keep in mind that these cameras were not made to make someone jump ship from Sony to Canon to Nikon. You know, these were made specifically for those users. Nikon made a full-frame mirrorless camera for their traditional DSLR photographer who has been seriously contemplating jumping ship to Sony. This gives them another couple years to kind of stay within the Nikon family of cameras. Same, you know, again, same for Canon. Panasonic's reach is a little bit different. You know, Panasonic is kind of out there, you know, hoping to capture the attention of their more pro line of photographers. You know, the folks who were creating vlogs and a lot of video work with their GH series of cameras, the GH4, the GH5. Now they're giving them the dynamic range that comes with a full-frame sensor. I think that's great, but again, let's see where this goes. I'm not really quite ready to say, here's the cosign to Panasonic. You know, they got the juice. The truth is, the full-frame mirrorless category still belongs to Sony. I don't see that changing. I don't see that changing for a couple years at least. And ultimately, this all boils back down to one main thing: the introduction of, you know, a Nikon full frame mirrorless, a Canon full frame mirrorless, a Panasonic full frame mirrorless, is that it's no longer just Sony's party. There were some other full frame announcements. For example, Zenit is actually working on creating a digital rangefinder with Leica. I think that's great news. You know, another option. Personally, I am interested in that for the same reason I'm interested in a Leica. I like the, you know, it's going to sound pretentious, but I can't think of another way of saying it. There's a certain purity to shooting with a Leica. You know, you're not thinking about all the different modes, the different dials. You know, like, it's literally just sitting there. It's composing. It's setting your aperture, your shutter speed, and clicking. You know, all the other stuff is secondary. So yeah, I'm kind of checking for the Zenit. Hopefully that comes out sooner than later. You know, there's a brand new Zeiss camera that's out. It's a fixed lens camera using a full frame sensor. Promises to do what Zeiss does in terms of like color rendition with their lenses. So, you know, that's interesting. I think that's pretty cool. But again, you know, what the competition in that space is. You have the RX1, you have like the Leica Q. So you're looking at the range of about $2,000 to $4,000. Might be priced way out of my league, but maybe I can, you know, rent it for a weekend. You know, it's kind of like getting a hot car, renting it for a weekend, taking it out for a test drive, kick the tires, that sort of thing. So, you know, maybe we'll do that. But again, going back to these new interchangeable mirrorless full-frame cameras, my hope is that in 2 years, I'll start seeing some of these cameras at a steep discount. It should drive prices down in general. I think that's definitely good for consumers everywhere. So, like, you have more choice, you have a lot less investment in terms of the quality of the camera. So, you know, just think about it. In 2 years, you'll have something that's the A7 III is now kind of like, you know, rebadged as some sort of kind of prosumer soccer mom type camera. The lens selection expands. Same thing for Panasonic and for Nikon and Canon. I think, you know, competition is good. Competition is good no matter what the industry is. I think this is great. I think we have an opportunity to see some really, really good gear coming out, especially in the photography world. You know, so yeah, so you have, that's what you have there. The other big, I guess, reveal at Photokina this year was Fuji's GFX 50R, the digital medium format camera from Fuji. What they did is they took the 50S and made it less of a SLR and made it kind of more of a rangefinder style. It looks like a giant sized I don't know, I'm not sure, it's not quite the XE, I think that's probably like the best one. I was gonna say like a X Pro, but no, it doesn't have the little viewfinder window, so it's more like the XE. The XE body just made ginormous, but it's not big at all. There are some like caveats. It's still the same GFX 50S internals, meaning you have the older version of the X-Trans sensor, You have some the same, I believe you have contrast detect autofocusing, not phase detect autofocusing. So, you know, autofocusing is going to be slow. Again, you have similar circumstances with the 50S. You know, you have a 40 megapixel sensor again. Well, that's cool. Keep in mind that the Hasselblad has, you know, a similar size sensor. It's just a little bit more powerful, a little more robust. They have like the available lenses. What's cool also is that they announced a 50 millimeter pancake for the GFX line. So you now have a quote unquote pancake lens for medium format. Will this necessarily street very well? Maybe in great light. Maybe flip it to manual focus, you know, do some zone focusing, you kind of get the most out of that. And last for tonight, just want to say a few words about the Samsung Note 9 that I have here for review. The review, it will be hosted on G-Style magazine, so make sure to check that out. What can you expect? So the Note 9 is the latest version of Samsung's Galaxy Note series. It's a beautiful, beautiful phone. I must say I am impressed by the near edge-to-edge display. It has a little curve to it at the side. The gestures are nice. It's a nice iterative version of the phone. If you had a Note 7 and it blew up on you, you know, fear not, this one will probably not explode. So, well, it may no longer work as a hand grenade, it will do all those smartphone tasks that you've come to expect from your Galaxy line of phones. The pen is, you know, the new tricks with the pen are pretty cool. You can, you know, use it to call out different apps. You can use it as your selfie trigger. Little fun things like that. Primarily, I've been focusing on using it as a camera and seeing what it does. So, you know, again, I do not like the quote-unquote bokeh controls. They call it live focus on the Samsung Note. You know, you take the picture, you adjust the blur in the background. It's cool if that's what you want to do. But what I've come, you know, what I've realized is that I don't really care for that unnatural bokeh that effect that it gives you. It looks like applying Gaussian blur in like very early versions of Photoshop. That's kind of what it reminds me of. But, you know, I get it. Like, lots of people like it. It's definitely something that people enjoy. They do it with their photos. They're doing it for Instagram. I've used it a little bit. I do actually enjoy using the pro mode a lot more. I feel like that's one thing that definitely Apple really needs to just jump on, make it available right off the bat instead of like, you know, relying on separate apps to do it. But yeah, you know, manual controls are fun, like especially if you know kind of what you're doing, you know, you're looking for a specific look. I personally like telling the camera what to do, not the camera telling me what to do. So, you know, that's definitely, you know, one of the things that I have to say that I do appreciate in the Galaxy. Other than that, it's a great way to get into all your Google apps. That's primarily how I'm using it. It's a good look. I do like it. I do like the screen. The screen is very bright. It's beautiful. It's crisp. But again, I'm not using it as my primary phone. I'm primarily using this as my camera, actually. So it's kind of like having my own little point-and-shoot camera that I take with me. That's kind of where we are. Again, a shorter episode this time around. Hope to have this one up very shortly. Make sure to like and subscribe on Google Play Music. We are now on that service as well. Find us on Podbean. Find us on Apple's podcast app. Be sure to leave a be sure to rate us. Be sure to leave a comment. Leave a review. Only a good one, because you'll hurt my feelings. Otherwise, you can find us at The Noisecast on all social media, as well as on Instagram. Also, if you want to read some of the some of my recent writings, my reviews on all things photography, you can check out gstylemag.com and look for us there, or the hashtag AllTheCoolThings. Again, thank you for checking us out. We wish Paul the very best as he is preparing for his and his bride-to-be today. We wish you all the best of luck, man. Much blessings to you, man. Hope you guys enjoy the time off, and we will be back next month with another episode. Peace.